Damn, it shouldn't even count as a swear. Honestly.
That was an excellent way to open this episode. I just started recording.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. Aaron starts recording and doesn't tell us.
Good. That's my MO every single time.
Oh, I didn't see you there.
I feel... Oh, hello, I didn't see you there.
Could you just look at my levels before I start talking for a long time?
You're doing well. Although, actually, those highest levels were just me hitting the nail polish, so...
But
so you're
she's got two mics.
You're fine. What are we doing?
Utah.
I've got all kinds of Utah stories.
Do you?
I'm not telling any of them on the microphone.
My mom's been to Utah. She said it's very pretty. You've been to Utah, haven't you?
I have.
Alex loves Utah.
Really? Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I have not.
It's beautiful.
He's a big National Parks aficionado.
Yes.
Does he have the membership?
Wait, oh, girl, yeah.
Does he really?
Oh, yes.
Wait, I have...
Kevin would appreciate that.
Just kidding. I had a moment where my brain thought that Las Vegas was in Utah, but it's not.
It's actually a completely different state.
I have not been to Utah.
So I haven't been to Utah either, so we can go together.
Okay, let's go.
Great.
Do we want to go after this episode?
Well, that is a good question,
salt
actually.
Salt the road trip?
You can tell me.
Oh my god, salt the road trip.
You can tell me at the end of the episode if you want to go or not. So, there's a state park in Utah. Actually, you might have been to it. Who knows? Could you go to state parks for fun?
You are weird.
Seems
that
like
way.
A thing you would stumble into, honestly.
Fair.
It's called the Escalante Petrified Forest State Park. Have you been there?
I don't think so.
Okay, well.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. And I think I have it several times in my notes, so let's see how many times I...
Do your best.
Don't shorten it to Bex. So, a man called Almond Harris Thompson explored the Escalante River in 1872.
I'm sorry, Almond?
Almond.
Okay. Oh. That's slightly better.
One of our favorite co-firefighters is named Almond. I know you care.
His name Almond? Or without the D?
Without the D.
Okay, great. That we support.
I think support his wife Almond. Listens to this podcast. Be nice.
Oh, hey, Almond's wife.
That's exactly right. Dear Mrs. She has Almond. A name, unlike many women in our podcast.
That's fair.
Heavens. Anyway, old Almond decided he would name the area Escalante after a fellow explorer, since the name means to escalate upwards.
Mm-hmm.
What is now known as the Escalante, which I feel like I'm saying that terribly wrong, but
I don't think you are.
Known as the Petrified Forest, is surrounded by plateaus which are said to resemble stair steps, so that's where the name came from. Within the park is a reservoir called the Wide Hollow Reservoir, which was constructed in 1954. The water is stocked with rainbow trout and bluegill and is apparently very popular for water sports. The state park was established in 1963 and opened to the public in 1976. In 1991, a visitor center was built and features different things from the park, such as petrified wood, which the park is known for, along with petrified dinosaur bones, ammonite, which I don't know what that means, and shell fossils. Anybody know what ammonite means?
Ammonite is, I think, a gem that
witchy
people
use or something.
In concoctions.
Oh, I think I'm surprised you don't know it.
We should get into it, honestly.
Honestly.
All right.
Ammonites for everyone.
Christmas presents.
Next book club.
I'd write that down, but I don't know where my phone is.
The park has multiple hiking trails ranging in difficulty with various views, such as winding lava flows and thousands of pieces of petrified wood. This information on the park came from the stateparks.utah.gov website, and here's an expert excerpt describing the beauty of the petrified wood that can be seen. This is from a brochure that's also linked on the website. Okay, so it says, step back in time, climb to the 200-foot high mesa top, which was once the bottom of an ancient floodplain. Approximately 135 to 155 million years ago, trees up to 100 feet tall were uprooted and buried in mud during periods of flooding. Groundwater permeated the buried trees over millions of years. Because they were in an oxygen-free environment, the trees did not decay. Instead, through a complex geologic process, silica solution in the groundwater replaced organic material in the tree, leaving the cell structure intact. Due to erosion, this fallen forest of petrified trees is now exposed. The beautiful and varied colors of petrified wood are caused by the presence of other minerals that entered the wood during the petrifying process. Iron oxides produce orange, red, and yellow. White manganese oxides create blues, blacks, and purples. So, it sounds beautiful, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, do you want to visit so far?
I think the rest of your sentence is going to be a no.
I feel like something's about to go down.
Oh. Well, you should know. You're probably reading my notes over my shoulder.
I can't, actually. They're in a nice font that I can't read.
Apparently,
she
I can't
did say when she got here, she was like, I wrote that in a very small font.
Okay, so the urban legend part of this, I did tell you all that backstory because it was important to the urban legend.
I thought you were just giving us a really beautiful visual tour. Like, you guys can't see this, but here's where we are.
Well, on the surface, it just seems like another nice state park, right? And it's really not even that ominous, but why are you doing this by me? Stop.
Again, if
Amanda
there was
just drawing my nails by my ear.
If there was a TV component, you could really get the flavor of what is happening. Because it is something.
I just need someone to be able to edit video because
I could take a crack at it. How good do you need it to be?
You don't need it to be. We don't need it to be good at all. I just don't have the bandwidth add one more thing.
I will do the video.
Well, I say that we record the next recording session.
I'll
do my hair
for it.
Catch it on the Patreon.
$10 yes. level or higher. Go.
You can get video of this process. You'll see Amanda
drying her nails.
Doing whatever it is, this hand drive. What's happening?
I'm sorry.
Remind me to tell you afterwards how the Burks got kicked out of the Petrified Forest. I think in Arizona. In Arizona. Because somebody, Alex's brother, kept picking up the Petrified Wood, which you're not allowed to do.
Do you know that if you whisper it, the mic still picks it up?
Does it still get it?
And Alex is dramatically rolling his eyes right now.
That's going to tie into the story.
Perfect.
Okay.
Delicious.
So the urban legend that's attached to this place actually gives me
the Willies.
Robert the Doll vibes.
No.
Not because there's a doll, but there's nothing close to a doll. But the Escalante Petrified Forest Park gets lots of apology letters all the time.
I'm so sorry, Petrified Park.
Because there are people who have visited there and did not heed the legend that is attached to it and ended up writing letters of apology.
Okay,
so that's what reminded me of Robert
like
the Doll.
That. Yes, because they do that. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so the beautiful petrified wood that I just described is said to be cursed. Mm-hmm. It's illegal to remove anything from a state park anyway, and there is even a sign posted that says absolutely no collecting, but people being people, apparently also the Burks, frequently take a piece of the wood with them as a souvenir.
Yeah.
Anyway. So legend has it, though, that if you remove... skipped a whole page of notes. If you remove the petrified wood from the state park, you will fall victim to the ancient curse, and bad luck will follow you wherever you go.
Yikes.
Oops.
Okay, so reports of stolen petrified wood from this area have caused their thieves bad luck date back to at least the 1930s, which, if you remember from the order of events earlier, was before the park even opened. There are stories of everything ranging from broken bones, multiple accidents, to losing jobs and relationships. It's said that once you have taken petrified wood from the forest, bad things will just keep happening to you. The state park gets letters, sometimes up to 6 a month apparently, that detail their bad luck and give their apologies. People send the wood back with their letters and ask the park rangers to kindly return the petrified wood to its proper place. Many of the people who write these letters include that they did not believe the legend, they are not superstitious, or they just didn't take it seriously, but karma or spirits or whatever is responsible for the bad luck has made a believer out of them. Letters sometimes come years after the offense takes place, and some of these letters are even on display in the visitor center, and the state park website that I mentioned earlier also warns people of the legend, so it actually says, decide for yourself if you want to believe it or not, and there's no proof that the legend is true, but there seems to be a lot of anecdotal evidence that supports the side of superstition.
Okay, but that's me as a marketer. It's super petty. Listen, you do you. But, here's some things other people have said.
Correct,
honestly, don't we wish everything that had simple rules was cursed?
Choose for yourself.
I kind of do.
Here's all the bad things that have happened to other people that didn't listen to my warnings.
Look, I'm not saying you have to do what I say. But if you don't...
Yeah. If you want to have your whole nose out of your mask during a pandemic, maybe... Listen.
Here's what you can expect.
I am a fan of this curse thus far, is all I'm going
to
say.
Can I jump sideways just long enough to tell you?
Great.
That I paid my dollar. paid my daughter a dollar every time that she aggressively shouted, Mommy, why is that person wearing a mask wrong?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because that maybe happened. That's Can't fair. Confirm.
Great.
That's amazing.
It was great. I'm like, I don't know, Fiona, take this dollar and put it in your piggy bank.
Yeah. Be cool.
Tammy, would you like to finish your story?
I can just tell you some excerpts from the letters and some stories.
Yes.
That
I need to hear those.
Were received from the park. So here's some that came from a website called Deseret.com.
The Deseret News.
The Deseret News, yes. There's an article that I just included the title of this article because I thought it was funny. Are felonious fossil fanciers plagued by an ancient curse?
That
I love an alliteration, honestly. Good for them.
It's really hard to get out. Just So one letter was sent back to the park with a stolen wood that said, I picked up this small piece of wood when I visited last year. I thought the warnings were phony. Since that time, I have had 3 accidents.
Oh, jeez.
This letter apparently included descriptions of the series of accidents and included a broken collarbone, 3 broken ribs, and a broken foot. This person also suffered a fire in his motorhome and a car engine that,
motorhome, of course.
Yeah, quote unquote, went south shortly after the warranty expired.
Cash.
The letter concluded with, I am a true believer, please take this back.
Oh, I feel kind of bad.
Another letter just said, I would advise anyone who thinks lightly of the bad luck to think again. Please place these back in their rightful place and ask for my forgiveness. Let's just say I learned my lesson.
That's honestly, a Kevin McCann apology right there.
Yeah.
I want to come back as this, like, petty rules enforcer.
Best right. role for you ever.
I mean, honestly.
Best work.
I just kind of want to work in this park and get these letters. I just think it sounds like fun.
I see Tammy as the, like, epic cataloger.
Mm.
This one can go on display. This one's not that good.
You found out.
Do better.
Mm-hmm. So a 2004 letter signed by Casper...
The Friendly Ghost?
Well, I'll just butcher their name. They're from Switzerland. Sorry about it.
Mm.
Rudis Hilly?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of letters. Rudis-Hilly? I can't do that. From Switzerland.
Basel, Switzerland, or maybe Basel, Switzerland, not sure. Reads, should have done some more research here. Since my travel, I just included it because it was from Switzerland, so I thought it was funny that it was from...
Overseas?
Overseas, and had been 3 years since their travel.
We need to go to Switzerland. It's beautiful.
I think so.
I think so, too. Since my travel 3 years ago, I had no good luck in my life, but every year, an accident or a disease, Jesus. I hope with this act of restitution, the Lord will have mercy upon me. I apologize and beg your pardon. Sorry.
Gracious.
Wow.
That's intense.
Dang.
Another writer said, I usually don't believe in this kind of stuff, but I have experienced a much higher than normal rate of bad luck since taking the wood pieces. My deepest apologies.
I love the fatalism of that one. Like, I have a baseline of bad luck. This has been a contract year, honestly.
Exactly.
I believe they call that a banner year.
Fair.
Yes. A separate article from the Deseret News had some that said, it was a great challenge sneaking out of the park. Sneaking it out of the park. Since that time, though, nothing in my life has gone right. Another letter explained, my life has been totally destroyed since we've been back from vacation. Please put these back so my life can get back to normal. Let me start over again. There's another article on newser.com that had letters that said, I hope with this act of restitution, the Lord will have mercy upon me. I apologize and beg your pardon.
Oh my gosh, it's so intense. Should you not have to drive back and put it back yourself? Like, if I was an angry ghost,
right?
You're gonna write me a letter. You come back here and you say you're sorry to my face.
Also, like, I feel like if I really had done something and believed that that was the thing that had just thrown everything off its axis,
mm-hmm.
I'm going all the way to finish that myself.
Like,
I'm not... I'm not putting it in the post and expecting a park ranger to finish it.
Imagine if it gets lost in the post, though. Like,
no.
Right. Like, how
are you ever going to track it down and make it right?
You better turn on that return receipt.
Sign here,
certified.
Please. Certified mail.
So another article from KSLTV.com. Some of these said that some of the letters are downright tragic. One of them was about a woman who picked up a few pieces. Her daughter was returning them. The woman had actually gotten terminal cancer.
Oh, geez.
And the daughter was returning them for her. So that's... super sad and kind of extra on top of everything else, but
tragic.
All the letters that come with the stolen rocks ask park rangers to please put them back where they belong. One rock was 30 pounds that a guy bought from another visitor after seeing it on the trail. Have you ever mailed something that weighs 30 pounds?
Also, how is the park ranger supposed to know exactly
literally
where these
my
come
exact
from?
Thought.
Yeah.
You know where you took it from? Sticky fingers? Come back and put it back yourself.
Like, do you have the GPS coordinates on the back of this rock?
I don't
know
if this was just a good Samaritan, but he had actually bought it from someone else who had stolen it. And sent it back for them.
What
so, like,
a nightmare.
The letter that came with it basically said, it is worth it to me to have paid for it and paid for the shipping to get it back to you so I don't have to experience the curse.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows where it came from. The park has even received letters from some people saying that after they returned those petrified rocks, their good luck came back. So even with all the stories and the fact that the legend is well known, many people are not deterred from taking pieces of the forest with them when they leave. In fact, if you visit the park, you have to hike like a mile or so away from the campgrounds and the parking lots up to the top of this mesa to even find the petrified wood deposits that have not been, like, disturbed by the people who have already come to steal stuff before. Mm-hmm. Because every, like, within the mile of the campgrounds and parking lots, they've all been picked clean by visitors that have been there before. The pieces of the park are returned so often that they have been dubbed conscience rocks. There have been some letters to the park sharing that once the rocks had been returned, I think I said that already, the person's good fortune had returned. Some parks officials have been interviewed and asked their thoughts, and some think that it could be a real curse, and some wonder if it's just the guilt of having done something wrong that has plagued these people, and once they confess, they felt like they had made things right, and their good, so their good luck returned to them because they, like, in a way granted themselves absolution. So I guess if that's the case, then you don't really care if it actually made it back to the park or not, but you're just like, I said I'm sorry, so I'm good now.
Sounds like me.
Several, why'd I put that back? Several of the people who have been asked of, like, the park rangers that have asked shared that they don't know if the curse is real, but they haven't taken any rocks and haven't experienced the bad luck, so I guess we can take that for what it's worth. It sounds kind of like me. Like, I don't know if it's real or not, but I didn't do it, so...
No, well,
like,
not why interested.
Ain't my problem.
But why invite the bad luck?
Right, exactly.
Whether it's
right.
real or not real, like, I'm not opening that door.
But apparently there's a similar belief about the Petrified Forest National Park in Arizona, so maybe you should just leave petrified pieces of nature where they are
maybe,
to be on the safe side.
Maybe you should just respect the rules of the park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, it's illegal to take it, so there's that.
I would like it noted that I'm delighted that my husband only downloads these episodes and doesn't listen, because he'd make it a point to do it just
to
go it.
To Utah just to
he would
yeah.
do that. No,
that's
he would do
fair.
It.
That's
100%
absolutely
would do
accurate.
It.
That's my story, so...
Delicious.
Delicious. Well, I would like to chime in.
I would like to know what you're adding to Utah.
Listen, this is... I feel like for a second I'm going to turn into... What's his name from Saturday Night Live? This always talks about the clubs. What's his name? Help me. Mm. Stefan.
Oh,
he's always like, this club has everything. Because what I intend to add... Again, this is my dream... And this is honestly groundwork for you to bring me back to do part two of the episode, because I would like mm-hmm. to talk about the history of what we now know as Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh, ma'am.
Okay.
So Skinwalker Ranch achieved, I think, most of its fame in the 90s with a family who...
I was going to say, was this not like a cult location or something?
It's not a cult location, but this family called the Gormans, which is a fake name... Actually, there was a book published, I think it was called Search for the Skinwalkers, in the 90s about their experiences. But this is the history of the area prior to the 1990s. So, this is the part where I feel like to properly enjoy this, you probably need to be wearing a tin hat. And mm-hmm. you need to have a deep appreciation for, like, the overnight AM radio, like, coast-to-coast AM, where, like, mm-hmm. cryptid hunters call in. Like, this is very much that kind of story.
Okay.
Just FYI.
So it's a full buckle-up scenario.
You're going to have to suspend some disbelief, I feel.
That's fine. All seven of our listeners are here for
They're
the ride.
They're here for it. Listen, mm-hmm. also, I'm going to say, I feel like in this episode... And because we're doing this today, I am embodying one of my favorite memes of all time. If you guys seen the meme, it's from Parks and Rec. As a Native American man that says there's two things I know about white people. They love Matchbox 20 and they're terrified of curses. Because I did spend the morning.
Wrong.
I did
yeah,
spend the morning
wrong.
Listening to Matchbox 20. And this is about curses. So
okay, but should we not? We should not discount the power that Matchbox 20 had in the early 2000s.
That's fair.
Right.
Mm. Yes, that is fair. So, again, mm-hmm. my source for this, last podcast on the left, this one's episode 352, Skinwalker Ranch Part 1. They actually did a three-part series on Skinwalker Ranch, but most of this material comes from Skinwalker Ranch Part 1. So, Skinwalker Ranch is located in northern Utah's Uinta Basin, which I'm not at all confident I'm pronouncing correctly. It's U-I-N-T-A-H. Uinta is how I'm going to say mm-hmm. it. Basin.
Sure. Don't worry if you got it wrong, Terrence will text us
Great,
when it comes
perfect.
Out. That'd be fine.
It's a 500-ish acre area of land that's been described as the beating heart of paranormal activity in the Uinta Basin area. So this area has a centuries-long history of unexplained phenomena that includes everything. This club has everything from UFO sightings, orbs, poltergeists, cryptids, cattle mutilations...
At one point, and this
all the things.
Listen, yes. In the Gorman era, there were actually investigators from the government got to be a fly on the wall in this meeting where, like, the money had to be appropriated in some official way. But the U.S. government launched an investigation because it might be a national security threat to, like, know what's going on at Skinwalker Ranch.
Wow.
But we're going to talk about the pre-Gorman history. So, historically, the Uinta Basin was disputed land between two major indigenous American tribes. So, the Navajo and the Ute kind of occupied this area, fought over this land. They have some run-ins with some European colonists in 1776. So, in 1776, two Spanish Franciscan priests entered the basin. They were trying to find an overland route from Santa Fe to Monterey. And they actually recorded the first non-indigenous people report of strange activity in the basin. They reported a strange, unexplained fireball that was flying over the sky where they were camped. In their diaries, they noted that the phenomenon was far larger than a normal shooting star, right? So potential UFO activity all the way back to 1776. Unfortunately, the most immediate major consequence of these priests being in the area was the Spanish's knowledge of the tribal people in the area and the Native American slave trade in the West, which is something that we don't talk about very much in school because it's awful and we prefer to whitewash our history and pretend like we don't do awful things. But this is not a Native American slave history podcast, so I'm not going to hit it very hard, but essentially there were lots of raids between tribes to sell people into slavery, and the Utes particularly were regarded as particularly engaged in the kidnapping and selling of their Navajo enemies into slavery. Although, to be fair, there are Ute-friendly sources that say the Navajo were just as engaged in the process, and it was actually the Paiute community that was a more peace-loving tribe that was truly decimated by both sides. But for the sake of the story, the Utes are sort of regarded as the aggressors. This is not helped by the fact that during the American Civil War, the Utes were known to side with American powers against other tribes, right? So they got this sort of reputation as traitors or allies of the European colonists. So this leads to a legend that the Navajo put a curse on the tribe called the Skinwalker Curse. Today, Skinwalker Ranch is like this tiny island that's literally in the middle of Ute reservation territory, right? Okay. So the story goes that the Navajo sort of cursed this entire land and the Utes that populated it with this Skinwalker legend. So this Navajo are very close-mouthed about Skinwalkers. They're very close-mouthed about a lot of their lore, because we have a really nasty habit of stealing all their stuff and pretend like it was ours, right?
Absolutely.
So I guess this is the caveat to say there's absolutely no offense mentioned. And this could all be very wrong, because it's sort of like people who had encounters with Navajo then telling that story, because most indigenous peoples will not share, particularly of the Navajo tribe, will not share this information with outsiders or anybody they don't trust. Well, so,
and isn't it also like not... like, you just don't talk about it.
Right. So you certainly don't talk about it with people you don't trust or people who aren't in the community, but the Skinwalkers are essentially, like, the big boogeyman of Navajo lore. So the story is, Skinwalkers are sort of like a corrupted version of a shaman or a witch who embody the absolute opposite of what a shaman embodies in the community. Like, shamans are healers, they're medicine people, like, they bring life, and Skinwalkers just bring destruction and misery.
Right.
So the story is, Skinwalkers, they sometimes start as shaman, right? And then they sort of get corrupted by the power and turn into Skinwalkers.
Okay.
But they can turn into humanoid versions of any animal. But historically, the most frequently sighted are wolves or dogs. And there's even stories, this part actually made me laugh, there's stories about Skinwalkers meeting and, like, coaching each other and, like, developing their craft. Like, Bob, that's a bad wolf face. You need to look at a wolf, because that is not what they look like.
A Skinwalker training, if you will.
Correct.
That's funny.
Skinwalkers allegedly can also control minds, leading others to commit murder or suicide on their behalf. And part of that is the very violent way in which one becomes a Skinwalker. So first, you have to be a magic practitioner. Mm-hmm. And then, this is where it gets a little gross, a little gold star rated. The only way to become a skinwalker is to murder usually a sibling or a close mm-hmm. family member.
That has come up in our research at one point.
We did this somewhere, in depth.
It was me, but it wasn't in depth, but mm-hmm. I do remember that part, and that is not okay. Like,
yeah, because I remember you talking about the skinwalker that ran along the side of the trail.
Yes! Okay, I was trying to remember if that was the same story or not.
Yeah.
So, not only do you have to murder usually a sibling or else a close family member, but you also have to engage in necrophilia mm-hmm. with the corpse.
Ew.
And then followed by eating / using every part of the body in accordance with Native American traditions, right?
No.
Even in human form, skinwalkers are said to have glowing red eyes like burning coals. If you ever see the true face of a skinwalker, apparently that's their only weakness. So if you ever see a skinwalker's true face, their non-animal face, the story goes that they will do everything in their power to kill you, because if you can identify a skinwalker, mm-hmm. that makes them vulnerable to being killed. Right. So mm-hmm. they will go after you. Skinwalkers are said to use corpse powder, which is named because it is made from corpses, blow in victims' faces, which lead to your tongue goes black, you have convulsions, and you die.
Oh,
there was gracious. a gentleman who was apparently a cryptid hunter. So we all know cryptids are these like mythical creatures, right? Like Bigfoot is a cryptid, all this. So yeah. This man who self-identified as a cryptid hunter called into Coast to Coast AM, which is one of those overnight radio shows that crazy things happen, and said that he actually had an encounter with a skinwalker. It appeared in the form of a giant dog, and they wrestled. Something was blown in his face, but he ended up besting the animal. He had weapons on him or whatever. He mm-hmm. ended up killing the animal, but he felt weird, and he had an Indigenous American friend who he called, and he was like, I had this weird experience. They blew the stuff in my face. And apparently that person was a member of the Navajo tribe. That man's medicine man of his community called and said, your friend is in great danger. Bring him to me. And they did some sort of ritual that was able to save the man. He's like, the medicine man essentially said, if you don't bring your friend to me, he will be dead tomorrow. Like, you need to bring him in. So,
wow.
That's where our knowledge of the corpse powder comes from. And it's actually not uncommon in other lore for people to use tools that are native to their area, like ayahuasca powder or whatever, mm-hmm. that involve these very psychedelic experiences mm-hmm. and, you know, and whatnot.
For the corpse powder, though. That sounds terrible.
It's unfortunate. No. So the man made it through, and the story goes that the Navajo have ways of protecting themselves, but they don't publicize them because skinwalkers are not, in air quotes, supposed to be dangerous to anybody who's not a Southwestern tribe member, right? They're not supposed to bother you if you're not a member of a tribe.
That's true. We've heard that before.
And they were not originally designed to be dangerous or a weapon. Developing the ability to change into humanoid animals was apparently originally a tool, and it's unclear whether it involved magical transformation or just putting on pelts and disguising yourself as an animal, but it was a way that, like, shaman in the community used to spy on conquistadors or other colonists. They would impersonate animals and go, like, hang out near where they were camped to listen to what they were doing. But it's something that over time, this power sort of corrupted its users, and so skinwalkers are still not weapons to this day. They just exist only to spread misery and destruction across the land. So, the skeptics, which we are not members of that community, right?
Certainly not.
The skeptics cite that perhaps it's a phenomenon called clinical lycanthropy, which is essentially when a person has delusions of being an animal. The person will even start to behave as an animal. Like, they truly believe that they are part animal. That perhaps people developed this specific kind of psychosis in response to the trauma of killing a family member or trying to join this community. Like, it was how their, like, brains compensated for what happened. But that is a lame explanation. Nowadays, skinwalker sightings have largely been replaced, weirdly, by a completely different and unrelated cryptid called Bigfoot. So, although the usual range of the Bigfoot is Oregon, kind of up Washington State to the Olympic Peninsula. That's like historically the territory of the Bigfoot. There have been a large number of sightings in that Uinta Basin area of Bigfoot. And they also have a lot of sightings of lake serpents. So there are these weird cryptid experiences that people are having in this area. However, all of these cryptids are no match to the sheer volume and number of UFO sightings. So this peaked actually in the 60s, the late 60s, early 70s. And funnily, a retired local science teacher, his name was Junior Hicks, sort of became the de facto reporter of all of these UFO sightings. I can't imagine what led him to this role, except for that people were like, I saw something vaguely sciencey. Let me go ask the only science person I know what is going on, right? Like,
that's not wrong. So
he collected over 400 sightings between 1966 and 1973. Many of these were believed later to be like satellites or other kinds of known phenomenon, particularly in the Cold War era, in the remote high desert as places where a lot of military testing happened. But there were approximately 80 that were credibly unexplained. And they included more than just floating orbs, right? The full crafts or ships were seen. In 1966, Junior attended a talk about the possibility of life on Mars with the Association of Utah Science Teachers, where he met Dr. Frank Salisbury, like the steak, which I can't deal with. And they actually began working together to document and debunk the strange sightings of the Uinta Basin, which then turned into a book they wrote called The Utah UFO Display, which cataloged the different sightings during the basin's most active period of UFO activity. Here are just a sampling, three of like big events. So the most, kind of the most documented event, I think is how it's described, the one witnessed by the most amount of people, actually happened in 1951, where 30 students and a teacher saw a large cigar-shaped craft sitting on the ground in the middle of the day. And all of them saw the same thing. And
just like chilling.
Yeah, just chilling. Yeah. In 1966, Dean Powell, who was a mailman, reported seeing a perfectly silent silver craft hovering in front of a hill, like while he was out doing his route. And then sort of my favorite one, Donna Massey was going to bed at around 11:30 p.m. after a long day of canning tomato juice. It's a thing that happened in the 60s. She saw a strange red light to the west. Good for her for knowing directions out her house windows, because I certainly do not.
No, if it's not next to the Chick-fil-A, I don't know where it is.
Correct.
That, but not me.
She felt like it was moving towards her. Like she like saw this weird light activity that she couldn't really figure out. She realized the light was actually a craft and much larger than she originally thought. She described it later as round, as big as a house, and emitting a horizontal red beam that changed colors to yellow and then green before it landed on a small hill. It's important to note here, in her story and in many of the other stories, the light that these crafts display has a very odd quality. It's described as odd by the people who see it, or boiling, or like something that you could hold like a blanket. Like the light appears to have weight and physical properties. Like if you were close enough, you could gather it up. Like it's a very odd,
weird
presentation of light. This was actually corroborated, God bless us, by a local Mormon bishop who came out of his house too. Like, I don't know where her husband was. Maybe he was just really asleep and like didn't care. But so it's Donna and this like local Mormon bishop who like both come out of their house. Like, what's that? Which is savage. Also an energy I don't understand. You need to stay in your house because, you know, that's not your business.
Okay, thank you. There. Right. Like, why are you outside? Correct.
So he came out of his house and watched the landing with Donna. And then as the two went to get a closer look, again, white people in a horror movie, the craft took off vertically so fast that it appeared to just vanish. Donna actually went on to see this craft three more times, including with other witnesses, and still displaying that odd quality of light that appeared like it had weight or could be like physically interacted with. And the thing that was interesting about kind of all of these UFO sightings is that they all lasted for significant periods of time, right? There was kind of like, there was X percentage that was like 5 or 10 minutes, but a lot of them were like 30 minutes or longer and had multiple witnesses, right? Yeah. So some modern paranormal enthusiasts Think of the Uintah Basin and Skinwalker Ranch within it as a sort of interdimensional highway, and speculate that a willingness to believe the phenomena is part of why there are so many manifestations witnessed by hundreds of people over the decades. I saw the light flicker, and I'm not okay about it.
I thought that was just
I'm not okay about it. Hello, we believe. Sorry. And last podcast on the left, the hosts describe it as completing a circuit, right? Like, to be aware of the phenomena requires this belief, much like in hoodoo or other ancient religions where everybody speculates, like, believing is the first step to imbuing the magic with power, right? So it's sort of like the universe is much more deep and much more complex than we think it is, and it's sort of like a protective bit of our brain that, like, won't let us see the odd things, like muggles in Harry Potter, right? Like, our brain sort of protects us of, like, we can make a story of this, we don't need to freak out. You just
gloss right over it, yeah.
But in Utah,
that's the glamour.
In Utah, which has a certain religion that is predicated on believing supernatural things to begin with, you find people with maybe that there's more of an openness, and so that's why they have this significantly higher number of experiences of things that are paranormal.
Oh, interesting.
But Skinwalker Ranch is sort of the nexus of all of this. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of the history. And that's also why it's so hard to catch hard evidence, right? Like, they, especially on last podcast, they were describing it as a very personal experience. Like, it was very much like whatever is going on was saying to these people, like, hello, I'm here. And you won't be able to catch me on video. But, like, 12 of you saw me, and so it's this very personal, it's a very personal experience that's predicated on the person's innate belief in what they see. So, all of that is the context in which Skinwalker Ranch exists, and the Gormans, particularly in the 90s, had a bunch, and it still to this day has a bunch of paranormal activity, but this is me positioning myself to come back for a future episode to talk about.
Nice.
The Gorman era Skinwalker Ranch. But that is the pre-Gorman history of Skinwalker Ranch in Utah.
Yes.
Which is about Native American curses and aliens and cryptids and all the things.
I'm fascinated by that. I would just
like to say thank you to Talia for doing better research on my state than I did.
Thanks for listening to Salt Over Your Shoulder,
a Redwater production.
We appreciate your support. Your download allowed our crazy idea to gain steam and make it into your podcast directories.
We couldn't do this without you. If you'd like to continue your support, you can engage with us on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at SaltThePod, or follow us on Facebook at Salt Over Your Shoulder. You can also email us at saltoveryourshoulder@gmail.com.
Special thanks to the one and only Andrew York for our awesome graphic.
If you'd like to continue your support, please consider giving us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast directory. This helps other people find us as well.
You can also become one of our patrons at patreon.com/saltthepod.
See you next time.